everyone, and welcome to the Brighter Together podcast. My name is Janet Courtney, and my guest today is Montana Guffey. Montana is the special education supervisor and behavior coach at Oscoda Area Schools in Oscoda, Michigan. Montana, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So tell everybody, Montana, a little bit about your role and what's going on at Oscoda.
So I am the special education supervisor and the behavior coach for the entire school district. I supervise meetings at Oscoda Area Schools from the age of 3 all the way up through 12th grade. We have a variety of students. Typically, I attend meetings probably 3 to 5 hours a day currently, which is quite a bit
of time.
Of
year. Yeah.
Yeah. It is that time of year. We have some busy seasons, but this is definitely one of them. Mm-hmm. The behavior coaching, honestly, is really just targeting students that require any assistance in the classrooms. It's supposed to also be a dual purpose. So I help coach teachers and what they can help students with in the classroom. And I also work with parents a lot, too, to provide that consistency and that balance between what we do in service at schools and what they can do at home.
Nice. Very nice. So you're pretty busy.
I'm pretty busy.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
Yeah, I was going to say, like I usually get that comment of, oh, I always see you. I'm like, yeah, I'm running.
So what has, you know, you talked about changing things and how you guys do things. What have you seen has been the outcome, or what are the positives that you've seen from what you guys have been doing? Because I know there has been some, right?
Yeah, there's been a lot of changes. So last year, we sat down as administration and with our superintendent, Dr. Moore, and we had some discussion on a lot of the behavior upticks that we, like many schools across Michigan, I know are experiencing. A lot of our students are coming in and it's really not one thing, right? But they come in and they have a lot more behavior than they've ever had before. And in a traditional environment, especially in a public education institute, it's very challenging when you already have some behavior challenges and then you're coming in with 27 other students, right? Or 24 mm-hmm. other students and you have one teacher. It's hard.
Right.
So we decided that we needed to be proactive in our approach, make sure that we were targeting this need moving forward. We actually took all of our paraprofessionals across the district, K-12, and we determined that we needed to train them in the area of behavior. So it's really registered behavior technician. It's what ABA therapy uses quite a bit. I know they have a BCBA or a BCABA, mm-hmm. which is a confusing acronym that we all had to get used to. And they typically have RBTs that work and service their students in an ABA, applied behavior analysis, outside of schools, medically. Mm-hmm. So we trained our parapros to also have that same credential and experience. So a lot of our parapros that are walking around have RBT training. Some of them are actually credentialed through the state.
Not everyone. I was going to ask you, Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah.
I was going to say, not everybody seeks it out and that's okay. But we also work together to try to make sure that there were some positive incentives for the staff. Mm-hmm. I can tell you from a teacher's perspective, it's changed the morale around the school. Mm-hmm. We also offered the training to teachers so they understood what acronyms we were going to start using. And we also tried to ensure that they were aware of what that training would look like and what that model would look like moving forward. Mm-hmm. But as part of that, we had to onboard a BCBA. So we actually have a board certified behavior analyst that works at the school too. Mm-hmm. And for those of you who don't know, a BCBA is very hard to come by in Michigan. So we had to figure that out. Like the BCABA is really like the equivalent of like a bachelor's degree. And then that BCBA is really the equivalent of a master's degree. Uh-huh. So your BCBA is above the BCABA and then the techs are below. It's interesting.
We love our initials in any field.
Yeah.
My son just recently joined the Air National Guard and boy, they like their initials as well. The military, I was like, oh, babe, he's spewing it already. You know. And I'm going, and as a speech therapist, I don't even know what the word is now. Look at me. I'm groping for words.
Right.
Every discipline, every mm-hmm. industry, I guess, every profession, there's the word I was really wanted was profession, has their own language, their own set of words that go along with it. And that is exactly what we're talking about, right? You know, it's just like that's the piece of it in related services and in therapy and all of those things. Board certified behavior analysts are critical. Tell people who might not know exactly what does an RBT or our BCBA, what kinds of things do they do? So, I mean, I know our audience is mostly educators, but, you know, there may be some that, again, they don't know 100%. By the way, too, we are doing this podcast in May, so that's why she's incredibly busy. I don't know when this is going to drop. So it's May 2025. So, you know, we're heading towards the end of the year. So I always try to do that because I'm like, you know, what are you talking about? It's November. Yeah, whatever. We're busy, but we are busy. Yes. So tell us a little bit about what they do.
So typically outside of a school, they work in that applied behavior analysis field. They work exclusively typically with students that have an autism diagnosis. So they have that neurodivergent component. They try to target the students younger. So they typically work up to about age 6, because once we're in age 6, we're at public school age. So that's when they should be going to kindergarten. When they come into the school at the age of 6, we're seeing that there is a very large behavior challenge that can occur when they are not already identified as being somewhere on the spectrum. So if they haven't received that necessary ABA treatment with the registered behavior technicians or with that BCBA medically, they don't have any therapeutic measures as a family previously to coming into school, and all of a sudden we're putting these very harsh restrictions on them from a public education institute. So it's very hard. It's very rigid. We are rigid.
Right. Yeah.
That's school. What we're trying
to
do.
You have to behave a certain way in school.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I get it.
Yeah. So we're trying to bridge that gap between medical and education. Right. So we're bringing in the therapy so that parents don't have to feel like, hey, I have to take my 6-year-old out of school who's about to be they are kindergarten aged, right? Mm-hmm. They should be in school, but I have to take them out and I've got to get them therapy so that their behaviors can get better under control before coming in. Mm-hmm. Now we're trying to bridge that gap and say, actually, hold up. Like, we can help out with this process. We can do a lot more to assist you and provide some of that therapy, but also make sure that your students don't get an academic deficit while they're receiving the therapy.
Yeah, they need to be in school.
They do. And it's a challenging circumstance and dilemma that parents have to be in, especially in circumstances like that.
Most of the time, these behaviors the children are not trying to be bad. There's something going on, right? I mean, let's talk a little bit about what are some of the behaviors that you're seeing, and what are you guys seeing as the reason for those behaviors?
Yeah. And a lot of the issues that we see in kindergarten, particularly, because predominantly when we see a student come in a circumstance like this, honestly, they typically are. They're at the beginning of their education experience. Right. Mm-hmm. But when they come in, there's a lot of frustration with the rigid rules and complex challenges that, honestly, outside of a school, you're probably not exposed to, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have the amount of students in a hallway transitioning in and out of classrooms that you would outside of an education institute. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then having to go to a lunchroom, sit down for 15 minutes, eat your food, and then go outside to recess for 15 minutes. There's a lot of transition there. Mm-hmm. So those transitions are absolutely one of the biggest challenges that we see in a school. Mm-hmm. And then also the rigid rules and expectations you're probably not used to. So sitting down for breakfast, having to go out, use a card to get a breakfast sandwich, right? Then go back into the classroom, sit down with it, but you have to sit down at one spot. Right. And what is that spot? Why don't I get to choose my spot?
Right.
So it can be hard and frustrating that first week. Honestly, we see a lot of the behaviors that we would typically expect, but then there are some now coming in the last few years that you wouldn't typically see as much of, right? So those frustrations maybe where there's more yelling, there's more screaming, there's more, I'm not doing, that's not going to happen.
Right.
It's a different world, especially after COVID. It's very different.
Yeah. That's been a theme of the podcast lately. We've been talking about that quite a bit, about how, you know, these little ones, kindergartners through third graders are just, you know, they're the ones that were tiny when COVID was happening. And now, because it's a different world and because they didn't go to preschool or didn't have the experiences that their older peers had, school's harder for them.
It is.
And lots of schools are doing amazing things. And you guys have responded to it and in a positive way for the children so that they can be the whole point, right? That's the whole point. We want them to be able to be in school. And it's just hard when they come in, and it's hard enough to be a teacher with kids before COVID and now after, you know, now that we're dealing with the aftermath, it's definitely. And but I love the fact that you guys have taken it upon yourselves not only to support your teachers so that they can teach, but to support the kids so that they can learn. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's such a great thing that you're doing. And on top of that, you are teaching your staff how to deal with it in a positive way. So kudos to you guys. It's funding. You have to spend money on these things and you have to invest in it. You guys are investing in your children and you're investing in your community and you're investing in the future, all of those things. So, so that's really an amazing thing. And the kids win, right? Mm-hmm. And we win when the kids win. So,
And we get a lot of positive feedback, honestly, from parents, which we really appreciate, especially within this last year, because I started last year in this role. It was my first time. So this is my second year as the special education supervisor and behavior coach. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the amount of uptick that we've had in positive feedback this year has been really large. I actually was finishing my degree at the same time this year from my directorship.
Why not?
But when I was doing that, I actually tackled on like, hey, what is the percentage? Like, what is the change? Because I see so much positive feedback. And I'm very data driven. Mm-hmm. And that's that special education background, right? Mm-hmm. So I want to see the numbers. I want to see what is the reduction. If I were to crunch it, what does it look like? And when I did pull it, I only pulled it on a few different students, but it was enough to show me that probably an average across the district is about 30% reduction in unwanted behaviors in the classrooms, which is substantial.
That's huge. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say from a teacher's perspective, if we're helping in some capacity and we're able to say, you know what, we are seeing a reduction. That's amazing.
Right.
So whatever we're doing, I advocate that more schools honestly look into it because it's been so productive. Mm-hmm. And I know there's a lot of amazing programs out there. So I'm sure that there are other things that they could do to replicate similar numbers. But this at least was one way that really worked for us and has been very social-emotional.
You know, but it's interesting. There's always buzzwords in education, right? You know, what is the trend this year, right? But social-emotional learning has become something that is, it's not going away, you know, and devices and you know, social media and technology. We've had podcasts about technology, but technology is a big piece of it. It's a big piece of what is a result and, you know, changes in parenting styles. And I'm never going to put it all on the backs of the parents. It's not just the parents. It's society in general, but it has to be addressed. It definitely has to be addressed because, you know, they still need to be functional children in society, right? It's just a difference now. It's just where we are. It's definitely where we are. So, and we've seen it at Lighthouse. We've definitely seen and have worked with many schools on the very, very thing you're talking about. And because we do contract BCBAs here as well and do some of the social emotional stuff. So it's definitely, it's definitely something that is not, it's not going away for sure.
Yeah. It's not. No. Yeah. And we do have more students now getting identified on the autism spectrum more than ever. So
more
it's
than
definitely
ever.
Not a number that's going down. It's just going up further and further. So,
yeah. Yeah. And those children need us. They need us to help them to navigate the world that they have been born into, because it isn't the world that you and I were born into. That's for sure.
So different.
I'm 57. So, you know, I was a product of the 60s. So,
yes,
you know, it was not, that was three channels. We had three channels and barely had a color TV at the time.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, Vietnam, I was born in the middle of Vietnam, you know, just as, you know, I remember those kinds of things being on the cover of Time magazine. And, you know, literally we had, and we, as kids, now I'm really dating myself, but you know, we used to go out and I saw a meme. Somebody was like, a younger person was talking about drinking from the hose. What are you drinking from the hose for? Well, we weren't in the house, you know, and we weren't allowed to go in the house. We were out all day. You know, it was like at 6 o'clock, mom called us back for dinner, but the rest of the day we were out, you know, playing, and we didn't have shoes on all summer long. The bottom of our feet were like leather because we just, you know, we ran around all summer. Poor kid. I mean, it was not like I grew up in poverty. It was just, that was just a society. And then there was the public service announcement, and I'm really dating myself now. It's 10 o'clock. Do you know where your children are? Can you imagine? That was of our public service announcements when I was a child in the 70s. Yeah.
No, I cannot. Yeah. Not anymore. That's not how it is today. That's crazy.
No, that's not the world. And that is literally 50 years. That's how much change we have. So when you ponder that, you know, when you really think about 50 years ago, and then you to go back, I mean, I don't even know what I am. I'm a Gen Z. Is that what I am? I don't know. But the before that, the baby boomers, because I'm on the edge, the baby boomers, they don't even, you know, they were, and then before them, they were the silent generation. You know, it was like you were seen and not heard.
Right.
That's not the world that we live in anymore. So it is definitely, and all of that to just say, you know, yeah, it's there. We have to deal with it. We have to take care of these children. And in 50 years, technology has turned and AI is turning it on its head again.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yep. And it's just constantly changing. Absolutely. Yeah. So as much as we can encourage kids to come into a school setting, I think the better, you know?
Yeah.
And we really model that, and we try everything that we can to intervene with every behavior. And even when a behavior occurs, we do everything we can to provide restorative justice practices first and foremost. So it's really changed all of our mindsets, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Kids don't want to be bad. Yeah. They don't. And they don't understand why they're being bad. So.
Yeah. They need us to teach them.
Yeah, they do. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, Montana, thank you so much for your time. This has been a great conversation. And like I said, keep up the good work. Where should people go if they want to learn a little bit more about you and about, I'm going to say it wrong now, Oscoda. I'm going to say that all again. I'm going to say it all again because that was not good.
Yep.
Woo. Okay. Because it just went, it was like Oscoda. That's not right. It was, my brain was just like not there. Okay. So we're going to start over. I'm going to start over. Well, Montana, thank you so much for your time. That was a great conversation. Where should people go if they want to learn more about you and what's going on at Oscoda Schools?
Really, if you just go to our school website, we try to keep everything very up to date on there. We do a lot in regards to MTSS, looking at our models, trying to ensure that everything that we have is publicly accessible, because everything we have, we want to make available to our community. Realistically, yes, it's fantastic. It's working for us, but we're not benefiting anybody if we're just holding on to this thing, right?
Right.
We want to shell it out. We want everybody to be able to utilize it as much as possible. So our frameworks, everything we utilize, we try to make as public as possible. But if anyone has any questions, absolutely, we always welcome that too.
I love that, because I've seen that over and over again. Educators are sharers. They really, it's not like I'm not here to just become a millionaire off of this great idea I have.
Exactly.
I want everybody to benefit. So Thank you. I think it's a trait. It's a trait of us. We just want people to be successful. So thank you so much.
Yeah. I agree.
All right. Well, take care.